My guest at this time is Bing West. He's been a guest of ours many times, frequent embed in both Iraq and Afghanistan, especially as of late in Afghanistan. He's the author of a number of books. His latest project, he's the co-author of Into the Fire, a first-hand account of the most extraordinary battle in the Afghan War. The author of that book is Medal of Honor recipient Sergeant Dakota Meyer. But also, Mr. West has recently written an opinion piece for the Wall Street Journal in which he talks about the troubling trend of green-on-blue violence. That's these joint U.S.-Afghan patrols where the Taliban infiltrate, the Afghan security forces go on these patrols and end up killing NATO troops, and most of the time those troops are U.S. And Bing, it's always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Just take us into the confusion and how hard it is to stop this sort of thing. How easy is it for the Taliban to do this, and how hard is it for us to figure out who the bad guys are in this process?
Well, I'm not persuaded it is Taliban. I mean, I'm not persuaded about that at all. The inherent dilemma is that you don't know what is driving these people, and therefore trying to know which among them is resentful and hate-filled enough to do something is murder is very difficult. Underlying it is a terrifically disturbing opinion that indicates that the majority of the soldiers believe if you kill an infidel, whatever cause, in a jihad, that you go to heaven. So you're dealing with a real, real problem.
That obviously provides motivation to do the worst towards those who are around you. So what toll is this having on U.S. brass and probably more importantly on those who are actually conducting the patrols?
You know, I don't know what would... I mean, I'm a conservative Republican Marine. I just don't know what we're doing anymore, to just put it right out there. I mean, if you can't, in order to avoid getting killed, if you're with Afghans, you have to have them turn in their weapons when you're inside a fort. And when you're out on patrol, you're supposed to patrol in such a way as to ensure they can't shoot you. Well, if your degree of trust has gone away, I don't know what you're accomplishing when people tell me that we're partnering. If you think your partner may kill you, there's something wrong with this as a strategy.
What do these Afghan soldiers need to go through to get to the point where they're going on these patrols with us?
Unfortunately, it's too late. What I mean is that we have 300,000 in the armed forces. There's no known way that you can be vetting 300,000 people, and every time they go home, and they might be under some influence or something, to get them to be re-vetted when they come back from leave or something. So it's a sincere dilemma that we have never run into on a battlefield in the past. And in my judgment, we have come to the end of what we can do with our conventional troops in the field. We should quietly accelerate bringing them home. And we should basically say to the Afghan leaders at every level, look, we've had it with you as a country. You know, we do not trust you. We believe many of you continue to be corrupt. And if you end up swinging from telephone poles, it's because you screwed up. But we're not going to allow terrorists to come back in here and come to the United States of America, because we can simply say, we're closing the airport, or we're not accepting any visas coming from Afghanistan. So you see what I mean? If we're really worried about terrorists attacking us, we can prevent that without having to do the work of carrying Afghanistan forever.
Bing, you've had the opportunity to be embedded with our troops, as I mentioned, on a number of occasions, and you've just recently been embedded on these patrols. Take our listeners inside that briefly, if you can. What are they experiencing? What are they having to think through on a daily basis over there?
Well, I'm just back from Sangin, which is down in Helmand, and the first patrol I was out on, I always do this, I turned to the patrol leader and I said, okay, how many tourniquets should I carry? And he said, well, sir, he said, we carry four. I said, well, two will be enough for me. And he handed me my two tourniquets. And the big difference between this time and other times is when I have been on other patrols down there, and what you do is when you leave the wire, the first man is carrying a metal detector, just like they use on the beaches to try to find pennies, and everyone else steps in his footsteps, single file. And you're worried about the improvised explosive devices, stepping on them and blowing off your legs. And when I was out there a year ago, you strap the tourniquets to the outside of your legs before you left the base. This time, they had them in their pockets, and I consider that to be real progress over where we had been in the past. But that gives you an idea of what our troops are going through every single day.
We're talking with Bing West, retired U.S. Marine, many-time embed with U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan. His most recent project is Into the Fire. He's also recently written a book on the Afghan war called The Wrong War, and you heard part of his reason why right there. Bing, do our leaders and do our ground troops there understand what their mission is? Is it to get the Afghans ready to secure? Is it to hold the enemy at bay? How do they view what their task is at the moment?
That's the problem, Greg. I don't think they understand the mission anymore, because I don't think we can anyone can explain the mission anymore. The mission was that we were to partner with them in the field with the Afghan forces so they could take over by following our example. Well, if you can no longer partner with them in the field, what the heck are you doing? If we send our forces out, are we doing their mission for them? The answer is yes, because we have to send ours out because they're not going out. So this is a heck of a dilemma. I'm not indicating there's any straight-up solution. I know what I'd do if I were in charge over there, but it's a heck of a dilemma we've gotten ourselves into.
Do our people there feel that we're just running out the clock till 2014?
Oh, sure, and so do they. I mean, so do the Afghans. That's the problem. President Obama should never have come out and said, well, I'm going to send some troops in there, but we're all leaving by 2014, because everyone knows the clock is ticking down, and that changes what everybody does.
And so you have the president who, in just speeches over the weekend, said, I promised to end the war in Iraq. I did it. I promised to end the war in Afghanistan. I'm doing it. Mitt Romney today with a big foreign policy speech, also using the year 2014, but saying he would have a more successful plan of ending our engagement there. What do you think when you hear those types of political statements?
I think President Obama did a great disservice to our country by leaving so abruptly from Iraq and causing chaos when he left that way, and now saying he's going to do the same thing in Afghanistan. I do believe that we have to leave, but we don't have to trumpet it from the top of the roof. And the most interesting thing I heard from Governor Romney today was that he said that he would give arms to the rebels in Syria. I thought that was a very sensible thing that someone finally said. But I have to say something else, Greg, because I don't want to come across as negative as I have, because I can make a huge distinction, and this is what I tell my Marines when I'm out with them. Look, guys, you have done your best for this country, and you have volunteered, and you have put your life on the line, and you can take enormous pride in what you did, and for the rest of your life, when somebody says, did you fight in Afghanistan, you can say, yes, I did. And that makes a vast difference, and you've also had a heck of an adventure, and you volunteered for it. Now, that doesn't mean politically everything is always going to work out well. But we're used to life. We're used to things not working out exactly right. That doesn't mean that any of you cannot say, all right, I did my job, because you did do your job.
Do they instinctively believe that, or do they need that type of reinforcement when they see the situation?
I can tell you, Greg, because I mean, I was just out in Sangin in the middle of nowhere with our troops, saying that to them when we came in from a patrol, and the platoon commander said, sir, could you say something to them? Because they're asking me, what are we doing? And that's exactly what I told them all, standing there, you know, dripping wet from the sweat. I said, and we had just blown up two IEDs. I said, guys, you can take pride in this forever. And they all came up to me and said, hey, sir, thanks. You see what I mean? Once you just tell them, look, you don't have to solve everything. You had the guts to be out here. That makes a huge difference to them.
Bing, we will have to leave it there, unfortunately. As always, sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Bing West is a retired U.S. Marine. He has served in the Reagan administration. He's been embedded with our troops on countless occasions in Iraq and Afghanistan. His most recent project is Into the Fire, a firsthand account of the most extraordinary battle in the Afghan War, written by Medal of Honor recipient Sergeant Dakota Meyer. Bing's latest book on the Afghan War is entitled The Wrong War. His piece on the joint patrols not going well is in the October 1st edition of The Wall Street Journal. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.